B-Mitch and Finley, High Noon in the District of Columbia. I feel like Dan Quinn's a guy that's listened to some AC/DC in his life. DQ might be more of like a hip-hop head than people realize, but I definitely think there's some AC/DC on that phone of his.
Just listen to him talk.
Yeah.
He tell you.
Speaking of Dan Quinn, he's addressing the media. Let's go.
All right. What's up, everybody? All right. Our final kind of wrap-up, training camp, roster decisions, all of that, to kind of discuss that. After today's practice, the players will also get a three-day break over the weekend, and they need it too. Our times together with them are really intense, so their time to recharge and go. But practice today is really squarely on us, and things that we need to hit on, things we need to work, timing, execution, our skill work, end of the game situation. So we're going to go right back into it, into that spot. And finally, and most importantly, Mike Sainristil and John Jones are excused today for two very good and special reasons.
Okay. To regain that.
Yeah, I think more of it just, you know, time on task, John, honestly, to say, do they have experience together? Yes. Banked reps? Yes. But still, like yesterday, we ran a deep play action, you know, that was over to Terry. That was like a good route that you'd seen before. So now let's say, let's work this one some more, this one a little bit more. So Jaden's excellent with that, to work a specific route with a specific player on some things. And so that's what you'll see more with him and Terry, extras, earlies, this specific route, this timing, because it's not all the same for every player. And so that's kind of the challenge of it, you know, from a quarterback and a receiver, not the, you know, the playing zone where you're, you know, back facing the quarterback, but, you know, deep overs, comebacks, the timing of it. So that's what they'll continue to work through.
Obviously, they're both very good players, right? But together, they, you know, the connection, the Reds and all that, is there something else about how they are, how they operate, besides just being good, that allows them to have a certain connection?
Yeah, I would say the complimentary reason that comes to mind first, I would think, John, is one's an exceptional deep ball ability to go track it, and the other's exceptionally throwing it. So I think maybe there's, I've never really thought of it in that way, but there's probably some complimentary football that goes to one another. So here's a guy that can really go and get on top of people and catch it over different shoulders on a deep ball, and a quarterback who's got the touch to do it. So I think that's probably the biggest complimentary piece, you know, of their games, that they're able to, you know, support one another on the things, two of the things that they both do really well.
To the guys who made this squad, they take a deep breath, exhale. What about you guys who sat there and went over every different name and every player and went back and forth?
Yeah.
When you finally make that 53, how do you guys react?
Yeah, it's a hard thing. It's not as hard as the players going through it, that's for sure. They have the toughest spot. But there were a lot of ones that kept us up at night. Let's think through it again. Get a late text from Adam, this and this. So, you know, like a either or, a scenario. And so I like going through those exercises with him, Chick, because it also gets me to think and think of it in different ways. And so I had, from my own knowledge, I wanted the coaches, they're going to rank everybody at this spot and what their roles would be week one. What about week five? You know, so we could think about what it looks like today and then what it looks like a month or two from now. So as coaches, you do have to think that way. And then also, I know we talk about practice squad and not, but I think of it like 70 men, knowing that here you're counted on to be responsible to be ready. And so if that's an elevation this week or a following week, it's going to happen. So I want them to just prepare and play in that way. So it's not like they don't get reps at practice. They do. And I want to make sure that, like, these are the standards and how we have to go about them.
And with the departure of B-Rob, a guy like C-Rod, Chris Rodriguez, he's been here now 3 years. His evolution is what to you?
Consistent, for one. I would say, like, when somebody can demonstrate over and over again that they're willing to put the work in, find the right read, just not just the physical skill, but mentally on the special teams, like, he's a player, Chick, that this team really trusts. If you ask Larry, like yesterday, he was giving the look on punt to another player who's playing the wing that's the same spot Chris often plays. So that move that he hit, he knows what stresses him. And so I thought, what a great example of like Jeremy and him providing the look of things that can be troublesome to some of the other players. And if you can get your team to a spot like that where they're testing one another and pushing one another, that's a really big deal. And I think Chris is a great example of that. I saw it in the preseason games, whether he was just excited when Bill had a big run against Cincinnati as he was for himself. And so that doesn't happen all the time. And but I like his fight. I like that he really worked hard to change his body. And, you know, those are things that when people continue to show you that, then, like, you pay attention.
To follow up on that, did you intend to keep four backs? Once you guys traded Brian Robinson, did you know you would keep four backs? And how much did Chris's play in, you know, preseason camp, and I guess even late last season, kind of play into his getting a spot this year?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think it was definitely, like, usually it's at the skill spot. How many tight ends, how many running backs? The evolution also of the return game, Nikki, that's influenced me too, because those are more plays and examples to go see if we can, you know, further even that starting field position. You know, right now at the touchback on the 35, we're anticipating a lot of people putting it into play, but we don't know that yet. And so I think that part of the game does, it feels running back-ish. Not to say that Debo is a receiver, but he runs hard like a back in a lot of ways, so he's certainly another one that we'll have. But I think that is a big part of it. We think of like an A back and a B back, Austin out of the backfield, third down. So it's not one size fits all, but I do like the versatility of the room.
Cliff said a week or so ago that you can't really tell what the offense is until you got some of the pieces back.
Right.
Now that you
not fully, but I do know that like we've still run the same, so it's not like the system changes. So putting them into some of those plays may look differently because of who the ball player is, you know, at that spot. But it's not like a new system comes in. So I think that's important to know for 10 others on that specific play, they'll be doing the same exact job. So let's face it, with, well, that I think it grows, you know, like I'm hopeful that the team we are in one is going to be really strong and stronger in four and stronger in eight as we're building it. And if we hit all the marks, then we should do that. Our skills should get sharper, but I like the competitiveness at the receiver spot. And it's not just, you know, Terry and Debo and Noah, but like Jalen is that way. Luke is that way. Like these are guys that like to battle for it. Our league is made up of a lot of contested catches. And it's one of the things Terry's exceptional at. Debo's in that same space. Noah is there. Certainly Luke and Jalen, they make up like a fierce competitive group. And so that's important. And knowing that, like, in tight coverage, these guys are going to go fight for the ball.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Dave.
I know that the offensive line is a unit, and John's part of that too. And so there's a lot of moving parts. But do you have a working theory as to which side you'd like to run to on third and two, fourth and one?
You're like, I like that you included John. I think Don Warren would be awful proud of you to put the tight end as part of the O-line. He is an exceptional blocker. I don't know that yet, no. But I do like the athleticism of the group. And so we have tested gap pulling schemes to the left, to the right, putting different guys in different spots. Coleman's been back in there. He's another guy that can get to the move. We've improved also in the screen games because we're ready to go to one side. But as far as like, hey, on fourth down, got to have it going to this side, we're not there yet to say this is where the ball is going to go.
You're not there yet with...
Yeah, or I'm not there to share that with you yet. I might be closer to that than I'm letting on, but I am I'm closer, closer than you.
Next week, with the schedule, how much Packers do you put in next week along with the Giants, given that you got a short schedule the following week?
The coaches really had to be the ones to put it in over the weekend, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. So while Adam and I were busy with that, they really dug in on Green Bay. And so that way, when they could then, as the week went on, then it kind of shifted. But having a Thursday game is challenging. Having a Thursday game at week two is better than week seven, because having, I don't know if the term would be exactly right, like a preseason bye, you know, how we've changed the schedule. So this window allows flexibility. I'm sure some teams are just doing, hey, 2 weeks on the opponent they're playing in the opener. But with that Thursday, there is some windows that the coaches aren't with the players, and they had Sunday off. I met with them by myself Monday. The players then had off Tuesday to begin practice Wednesday. So there was some pockets that they were able to do that. And then you have to shut the folders and the, put that in the drawer, and it doesn't come back out again until that Monday. But it did help.
It did. Fourth down success last year was such a big part of the team's story. Like history and like just probability would say it's very difficult to duplicate 87% success rate in fourth down.
Agreed.
How do you approach that? The idea that you're, you know, chasing that, but it's also, you know, probably not something you can like count on.
Yeah.
Achieving again.
It's not all one, you know, going into the game, sometimes it's, I want to make sure we're stealing another possession. So there's some strategy going on with that. It's about like nine drives or so a game as you're going through it. And so how do we gain an advantage on somebody? Sometimes going for it on fourth does that. Where's the kicker, you know, comfort level to go into that space? And then it's really by the distance. You look at the opponent, you know, where do they fall on the end ones? How about in twos? You know, where do they play on the threes and fours? If it's a certain style, maybe you're more apt to know what you're going to expect. But yeah, Jaden was a big factor, you know, in that 87% or whatever the number was. There was a handful for sure that was called one thing, and then something happened and like he made the rest go down. Like, we don't have a play called that. You don't want to count on that. That's a reactive way of the ball player doing his thing, but you don't want to lean into that. I think that's irresponsible. You want to make sure, hey, this is what we think we're going to do, how we're going to go down. But really by game is we make those decisions as much as we can before the game. So going in, the coordinators know what to expect, how we're going to do it. And then as the game unfolds, I'll communicate with them, you know, where we're at. But I think the secret for me on the telling the coordinators is early in the drive. So no one's ever caught off guard. Hey, we're going to go for it here, you know, like, because it can impact some of your third down calls if it's into fourth down, knowing that you may have two downs.
Follow up on what John's asking for about, you know, quarterback receiver connection. You've defended a lot of those. You know, you had Matt and Julio in Atlanta. For you, like, what are kind of like the, you know, earmarks of what makes a great quarterback receiver tandem, aside from just, you know, great skill on by both players?
From my defensive perspective, you know this route's going to happen, and they still complete it. Like, that's the hardest. Like, damn, we talked about this throw or this route, and they're so exceptional at that that they were able to, you know, put it in the right location at the right spot. But it is a real thing. The connection, chemistry, all of that matters. The best of the best players, they spend a lot of time together. That's even outside of coaching and that, to make sure those moments are delivered upon. But we're fortunate that Jaden and Terry are two that do that extra.
Hey, Dan, you mentioned...
Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be back. You mentioned Jalen Lane. I guess I'll start with a specific question. You knew what you were getting in him kind of when you drafted him. What has surprised you about him over the past couple weeks?
We knew the punt return ability was really strong. What I probably didn't know, and I knew he was fast and explosive, but the way that he's taken to coaching from Bobby, you can almost see the drill work come into the play. And so, like, there's a specific way you run an option route when somebody's on you. You don't want to hustle too quickly because then the defender's not really into the stress. So seeing him fully express how to work somebody into a technique, that's a really big deal, because in college, especially on offenses that play really fast, there's not as much man-to-man. And so that's one of the things that can be more challenging for a slot or a wide receiver that's playing in a tempo offense, like, because college plays faster than we play. So you see less matching and tight coverage. So they're able to run their routes at full speed and hit it and go to the next play. And so running an option route, defeating leverage, beating people in man-to-man. That's been an impressive, I'm not going to call it catch-up, but like development from the time he's arrived to where he is today.
And then a philosophical question. I know he played for his dad in high school, and you probably get a lot of guys who are sons of coaches. Is that like an overblown thing, or is there something different about guys who grew up around the sport in that way?
That's a better question for Jalen. I would say it's got to factor in somehow when you're 5 years old and you're at football practice when other people aren't. You saw things that happen, and I'm sure, like, you know, it matters. You know, Cliff's father was a defensive coordinator. So, you know, that different sides of the ball, and coached him as the – so he said, yeah, try throwing an interception in high school when your dad's the D coordinator. You know, not so easy. So with Jalen, like being around football his whole life, is that a factor on why some of those things are coming easier? Possibly. But at the end of it, man, like, I like just the work that he's putting in. For these rookies, what they're doing right now, this is the hardest thing they've ever done. And that's a real thing. But they'll make it, you know, but they have to put in the work, whether you grew up as a coach's kid or not. Like, it comes down to what we do out on the field, on the grass, like at practice. That's where it has to go down. And I'm encouraged because what I've seen from him is this steady rise.
Good afternoon, Coach.
We got time for three more.
Yep. We talked extensively about you taking lessons from your first head coaching run to this one and not copy-pasting, making things better this time around. Having led a previously successful team through training camp this year, what are some of the lessons you pulled from that last experience to this one?
I really lean in, David, and you'll appreciate this from the military side, is the after actions. What did I like? What did we need to do differently? What needs to stay the same? And so that prepared me to go into, okay, from a coaching side in these practices, we changed the length of our individual session to being longer. They wanted more time on more skill work. The team's in better shape now, so we practiced a little bit longer. We got more reps than we did last year in almost the same amount of time. So we're becoming more efficient, but because the guys are really fit and they're ready in the system, it's allowed us to practice more. So that's been a benefit. So I'd say, looking back before you begin the planning of what took place on the last training camp, what did I like? And I just finished this year's of things I liked. So as I'm, that'll go into the drawer and be ready for 26. But it does help to have an after action process to say, this went well, we need to do this more. And that's how I went about it.
If Tiger Woods can change his golf swing multiple times over the course of 10, 15 years of complete dominance, a football team can sure evolve. And I love that DQ has that mindset of, hey, man, we were good last year, but we got to get better.
Find out how you get better.
Everybody's got to get better every year. And you know who understands that? The folks at Orsman Automotive of Virginia. This afternoon, I'm going to drive my Orsman Fairfax Toyota 4Runner home. Then my wife and kids and I are going to get in our Orsman Fairfax Toyota Sequoia and drive to the beach. I buy cars from these people. This is where I get my car's service. I trust them. They take great care of me and my family. They'll take great care of you and your family. They've got 7 locations all over Northern Virginia, from Alexandria to Chantilly. All the options you're looking for, all the brands. They've got great deals, great quality certified used vehicles, and great financing. But above all, B, they got that Orsman Lifetime Edge.
Yep, that's why I send my kids over there. I bought all their cars from them. When they go over there, they take care of them. Their Lifetime Edge gives you up to $1,500 in extras, including a complimentary car wash with every scheduled maintenance. They give you loaner cars with every major maintenance, and they give you a lifetime engine guarantee. And there's more good news. If you have a car to sell, take it over to Orsman. They'll pay you up to 125% of the Kelley Blue Book value. Other people want to give you 100%. Some people only give up to 90%. They give you up to 125% regardless of its make, model, or year. It's simple at Orsman. They like to keep their customers happy, just like JP and I. We're two beyond satisfied Orsman customers. Let's ride together.
B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan, 12:30 on a beautiful Thursday. The wind is kicking up, though, man.
Yes,
B, this tent is getting beat up all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's telling us it's time to go.
I bet Leadville's not telling us that. B, DQ, it was pretty interesting there. Two things really stood out to me. Harrison asked him about, you know, how have you learned you got to continue to get better, whether it was from your stint in Atlanta or whatever. And he said, yeah, like the players said they wanted more skill work. So It's interesting. I noticed the individual periods had gone longer this training camp, but I didn't think anything of it. And then he said, he's like, yeah, some of the feedback we got last year was guys wanted more time in individual to work on their skills. And there, then you see that change. One of the things I applaud about Dan Quinn, he's not a my way or the highway kind of guy. Like, he's...
That's a big plus for him.
He's always trying to evolve. And not all coaches are like that. You know what I mean?
Not, most of them are not like that.
Right.
They feel like, I'm the dictator. I tell you what to do, and you just do what I say. Even though they haven't played the positions that you play.
Right.
You know what I mean?
The other thing is, this is one of the frequent criticism. Not criticism might be too strong. But the folks that think Washington won't be as good this year as they were last year, one thing they point to a lot is the success on fourth downs.
Uh-huh.
And I think there's some legitimacy to that. Like, if you just think statistically, they were incredible last year on fourth down. And that is hard to do. Last year on fourth down, they converted 20 of 23 attempts, 87%. Mm-hmm. They held opposing teams to 66%. If you just run the numbers, it's 20% more possessions going your way. And DQ said, what I liked is that there was an immediate acknowledgement, yeah, we could regress.
Mm-hmm.
Like, undoubtedly, that is something that could go the opposite direction for our organization.
Uh-huh.
He said a lot of it, though, is understanding the situation and having a game plan beforehand. So it's not like, all right, we get to third and six at the 45-yard line, we already know from a philosophical standpoint where our go zones are, like mm-hmm. where we're going for it on fourth down, where we're not. So then it's not a scramble on fourth down.
Yeah,
that, to me, is a big part of one of the reasons I've repeatedly cited about why I think organizationally, you know, winning the close games, being really good late in games, I don't think that stuff's an accident. I don't think that stuff's fluky because they study it, they monitor it, and they coach it. And I don't see them being any less aggressive on fourth down, do you?
No, I don't see them being less aggressive. But, see, this is the thing about a question like that. You were 87% on fourth downs last year. Probably this year you won't be that good. What if they're 80%?
What if they're 75?
What if they're 75? That's still good. But I ask this question. You now have a second-year quarterback with more experience under his belt. What if they don't have to be in fourth down situations? What if he utilized some of the things that he discovered last year on third, on fourth down, when they went for it, how Dan said, play would break down, but Jaden would make something happen. How about he utilized that on second down, third down? Now you're not in fourth down position too many times to go for it. So they may go for less fourth downs this year, still have a great percentage, and someone is going to say, you all regressed. But then when you look at third down conversion, they probably went up 5 to 10%, which makes it even easier for you, right? So I just think that we get caught up in a situation of asking one-sided questions. Just like when we hear about, oh, the quarterback will have a regression because they got tape on him. Well, hell, you don't think that quarterback and his offensive coordinator didn't have tape on you? You know what I mean?
Right. I hear that. I think asking him that question is
legitimate.
No,
I'm not saying I'm not saying it's a bad question.
Right.
But it's a question that, what if you don't have to go for fourth down this year because you're getting first down on third down? So it's
sure,
all this stuff works itself out. So let's say if we went for 50 of them last year, this year you might have to go for 15.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. So when you get better at other positions or other situations, sometimes that situation is not the final thing. They were exceptional last year, and they had to do it. What if they don't have to go for him this year?
Well, the other thing he said there that I thought was really interesting is, and I've pointed this out on our show, but like whenever I do like national radio hits, like mm-hmm. when I go on with ESPN or Vizen or something, they ask about the fourth down stuff. And a lot of my reply is, you know, I don't think people ask the Eagles similarly
uh-huh.
or the Bills or the Ravens.
Yeah.
And the Eagles are kind of a unique case because of the tush push, I would say. But the Bills and the Ravens just rely on their quarterback to make a play.
Mm-hmm.
And Allen is different because he's so big and strong. But like, DQ said a lot of our fourth down success was because of Jaden.
Yeah.
And it wasn't necessarily the play we had scripted, but Jaden just made a play for us. And he's like, I don't want to be too reliant on that. And you're right. You don't want to be too reliant on that. But you sure as hell don't want to stop it.
Like at all.
If part of the reason you have the success on fourth down is because Jaden can just make a play for you, mm-hmm. you're not going to back off that.
Yeah. See, for me, I look at fourth down situation as a pressure pack situation. And in that pressure pack situation, your quarterback in his rookie season was as calm as a cucumber. So I say, how about taking some higher risk on second and third downs, which I expect them to do, which now alleviates the need for you to have to go for it on fourth down. Because in those positions where you are, everything else is sped up and it's tight as hell. How about try that in some of those situations when they're a little less apt to be as tight? And then now, you know, like we talk about, LeBron had all them game seven wins. MJ didn't have to go to game seven. So what I'm saying is Jaden may not have to worry about fourth down this year because he's going to handle it on first, second, or third down.
Well, and what would really help as well is if you run the ball a little bit better.
Yeah.
They were good on third down.
That'd help the hell out of a lot.
They ranked sixth in the NFL on third down. They converted almost 50% of their mm-hmm. third downs. But if they're in more third and three instead of third and seven, mm-hmm. should help
yeah.
the third down conversions and in turn fewer attempts on fourth downs.
See, for me, Jay, I would like to see they were third on third downs.
Sixth. Help.
Sixth on third down. People could say that they're going to regress at that. I want to see that get better. Because if that gets better, you don't have all them fourth downs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like I always when I hear a question as a player, I look at another situation that can make that question obsolete or make it like I don't have to worry about that too much. I just think improving first and second down production makes the third down even easier. And if the third down is easier, then you'll have a lot of fourth downs.
For sure.
And guess what? If you're so effective at getting a certain amount of yards, in certain situations, you're like, hell, we're going to go for this anyway. We're in field goal range. Our defense might be playing better. Let's go for it. We get it, we get it. We don't.
One thing he did say there, though, that I'm curious your opinion, is he said a lot of times fourth down depends on our confidence in the kicker. And last year, I don't know how confident they were in the kicker.
Yeah.
They played kicker roulette kind of all year. There was a lot of in, a lot of out. Zane Gonzalez was a super nice guy, but he even talked about some of his anxiety stuff, like watching uh-huh. Zane get ready for a big kick, and he's scratching his head and everything.
It scared us.
What do you think the confidence is in the kicker now,
I don't know what it is. I can just tell you this. Yes, we've been in situations where we're not confident in the kicker. I would have to believe you're not 100% confident in him right now. Now, he could probably get a little streak going here over these next weeks or 2 weeks or whatever, and things may change. But I remember the day out here when he hit 5 for 5 and they had to make it for them to get off practice early, he nailed every one. You know what I mean? Then he got in the game and he missed his first one. Bang. Missed it. What is it that's making him miss him? You know what I mean? Was it when? Was it the stadium? What? He has to figure out what it is because the dude has proven he has the leg to do what he needs to do, especially inside of 50. Now, if he's not going to be able to knock him in outside of 50, then you definitely going to be in some chances where it may be fourth and one. And if he can't hit him consistently outside of 50, I think many people don't want to see him kicking. Why? Because that give the if he miss it, the other team got great field position. You go for it, they still have great field position. So it comes to a point where their level of confidence is going to grow by his level of consistency
totally.
Over the next 2 to 3 weeks in practice.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's nice. You heard DQ say that the player's about to get a break. The NFL, you know, I haven't heard Chris Russell scream about this, Brian, that for all of the
you just gave him another reason to
all the critiques, Rooster, you get Labor Day weekend off, bro. You get to chill. The NFL is closed, man.
You just gave him a reason to scream.
And he'll scream about something.
He'll find something.
But the good part with the Labor Day break, we get to focus on college football this weekend. And the other good part with the Labor Day break, all that dope stuff you wanted to for your outdoor space at your house, it's now on sale because it's about to get colder and they want to move some product. The Labor Day sale is here at Offenbacher's and you don't want to miss it. Save big with huge price reductions on outdoor furniture, fire pits, hot tubs, and swim spas. Plus, you can take advantage, this is a big deal, folks, of free financing options. Why stop swimming just because summer's over? With a swim spa from Offenbacher's, you'll keep the fun going year-round. They're more affordable than a pool and give you all the soothing benefits of a hot tub. You can crank that thing up when the weather gets cold and just chill. Watch a football game, have a cocktail, enjoy yourself a hot tub and a swim spa in one. More exciting, how about a sauna? I love going for a sauna, man. I think it really is good for the blood flow in your body. You get in there, thing up for 20-25 minutes, you feel terrific. You can check out indoor saunas, outdoor saunas, infrared saunas. They have them in the Annapolis and Herndon showrooms. Make this Labor Day unforgettable. Check out the Offenbacher's locations in Annapolis, Gainesville, Herndon, and Rockville and create the backyard retreat you've always dreamed of. B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Going to do a little college football preview here in just a moment. I want to clear the air on something that I think people are just really misinterpreting. Dan Quinn was asked about the challenges of having a short week in week two. They play Sunday, then they play Thursday.
Yeah.
And he kind of explained, he's like, you know, in some ways having a week two short week, it kind of helps. Because of the way the schedule is, we have a couple days where the coaches aren't with the players. Because when it really got time for crunch time, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday to make cuts, Sunday is an off day for players because they played a game Saturday.
Yeah,
I think they gave them the day off Monday, and then Tuesday is cut day. So DQ said, you know, some of our coaches were able to get a jump on looking ahead to Green Bay.
Yeah.
And watching some tape. Trying to figure some stuff out.
All right.
Dan Quinn said this into a microphone at a press conference live on YouTube. I tweeted out. DQ said Commanders coaches spent a lot of the last 3 days trying to get ahead of the game plan for Green Bay in week two on a short week.
So they think he's looking past the Giants?
Yes.
Okay. Can I help explain this for you?
Yes.
Normally, the last week of preseason, the coaches start implementing the plan, the game plan for the first week. We all knew that the veteran players weren't playing. But that doesn't mean that Cliff wasn't installing and Joe Witt wasn't installing and Izzo wasn't installing their stuff for the Giants. They just wasn't going to use it in the game. So the last preseason game is basically worthless. I'm going to be honest. Because all they're doing, they got to go through the motions. They're going to play the game, but they are getting their starters and stuff ready to play the first game. And he said, so over the weekend when they were trying to finalize everything to figure out who they're going to cut and release or whatever on Monday and Tuesday, the other coaches started getting the game plan ready for Thursday. See, it's kind of like this. If you go buy this Apple computer that might have 5 gigabytes of whatever, megabyte, whatever you want to call it, you can utilize a lot of storage. You can do a lot of stuff. But if you buy one that only has one, you can't do a lot of stuff on it. These football players are not so dumb as many of you would think to where they can only focus on one thing at a time. It happens normally. If I know I got a game Monday and then another game the next Sunday, we start putting some of the stuff on our next Sunday coming in. Because what you're going to do is try to take the game plan that you have for the first game of that shorter week, and you're going to build on that game plan on the second game. So what they probably did is took a lot of the stuff from the Giants game, knowing that some of that stuff could work against Green Bay, and add on to it to find the special things and specific things that it goes with Green Bay. So when you hear these things, don't think that they say, to hell with the Giants. That game plan is installed. They're ready for that. The players may not have the whole game plan.
Right.
But they got the gist of it right now. And then starting Tuesday when they get back, because they don't really start practicing until Wednesday, Thursday right. anyway. Then they're going to give it all to them, and then they really, really go into making sure it's specific.
Granular.
Yeah, for everything at that point. So, no, they're not getting past stuff. But that's my thing about sports fans sometimes. Not just sports fans, people. Pump your brakes a little bit and just ask a question. To just jump on something and start raising your voice and acting a damn fool when you could be completely wrong makes no sense.
How about this from my man Earth Tones? He said, 100% JP should not have tweeted this. What was he thinking? Of course, prepping early is good, but why state it in a way that puts targets on our backs? If I was on the Giants and I saw that tweet, I'd feel hella disrespected.
So you don't think that somebody from the Giants would listen to the DQ talk just now and say we're already doing this? This is where people are. But this is what I'm going to be mad at you again. Stop bringing them idiots to the light. Look at them, know that they're stupid, and keep moving. Nah, look at them, know they're stupid, and keep moving. Because at this point, you think the team is posting what Dan Quinn is saying. It's on YouTube. Anybody that's in the United States or any world can follow the YouTube page of the Commanders. And they heard his whole damn thing. He didn't give any secrets. He said, we are implementing stuff early. Guess who else is doing stuff early?
The Giants.
Green Bay.
Yeah.
Okay? So just because I say I'm implementing something early and JP posts that, what the hell did they learn?
Right.
They heard you implementing something early. They just don't know what you're doing. So why the hell is something wrong with it?
It's just, I don't know, man. I think folks read far too much into certain things. And the coaching staff has probably had plans for the Giants for, like, when do you think that was? They put in a little bit of stuff for that Bengals game. Not real plays, but they had some specific stuff they wanted run against the Bengals for that Monday night game. That mm-hmm. was close to 2 weeks ago now, mm-hmm. right? That was probably like 10 days ago, 11 days ago. When do you think members of the coaching staff started working on stuff for the Giants? Last Wednesday?
Beginning of preseason?
Yeah.
I remember Coach Gibbs like, yeah, we trying to figure out who's on the team, but we're getting ready for the first game. And I'm like, but we got these preseason games. Say, yeah, we're running our base stuff then. But all the other stuff that we implement that we don't run, that's getting ready for that first game and for extra games in the season. So when they showed up for OTAs, they started getting ready for the Giants. When they got ready in the training camp, they started to enhance that at our plan again. When they got to the last preseason game, they were trying to streamline what the hell works and what doesn't work. Now they're ready, but now they got to bring it in and really, really get hyper-focused on it, which made him so good on that one that Sunday and Monday, they were able to focus on Green Bay a little bit. What is wrong with that?
Nothing.
Like I'll ask this question to that person, whoever that person was, and he probably listening. So I asked him, when you have a project at work and then they throw another one on you, do you never start looking at the second one till you completely finish with the first? Or when you know you've gotten to the point on the first one where you can chill a little bit because you got to wait on somebody else, don't you look at the next one and start working on it? Same thing. Like if you have a story to cover and you and Curran go out and y'all get it done, but you just got some little things to tidy up, but you see another story over here and your boss say, I want you to try. You're not going to look at that one until you finish with the first one? No, you're going to go get this one over here too, right? It happens every day. The problem is people like to try to make themselves seem smart. Most people are not smart. I'm not saying that you're stupid, but you're not smart on everything.
When we return, college football is back. So are the B. Mitchell Finley college football previews. Nobody go anywhere. It's B. Mitchell Finley on one.